Got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walked the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Got started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthfuls, smart talk about food, wine, and lots of farming. It's Michelle, Anna, Jordan on a very warm Sunday evening. Hope you've had a great weekend. Got out to some farmers markets, as I always say. Maybe some farm stands. I've noticed several new farm stands as I've been running errands around the county. Hector has a farm stand. His farm stand is going now there on Fulton, just on the west side of 101. And I've always saw one out off of Bodega Highway that drove by too fast. I couldn't even tell the name of it. It wasn't one I'd seen before. So I'm going to be doing some research on our farm stands and get back to you with that, because that's another great source. And we were having a conversation on Facebook. Oh, Facebook gives me the illusion of having a social life. But, you know, you really can have some good conversations, especially if you keep just get rid of the trolls as soon as they, you know, raise up their ugly heads, get rid of them. But we were talking about shopping and where do you shop? What stores do you patronize, both in Sonoma County and then elsewhere? And mentioning farm stands is what makes me think of it now. And this is how I think of it. If you pick up a pencil and you draw a circle, little round circle about the size of a dime in the center, and then you draw another circle outside of that, and another circle outside of that, and then one more circle outside of that, in the center, write your own garden. If you can have a garden, if you can have chickens, you know, raise a goat or a lamb, but steal from your neighbor's plum tree. You know, it's your garden and your neighborhood. In the next circle, you have local farm stands and local farmers markets. In the next circle, you have locally owned independent markets. That would be here. We have Oliver's, we have Big John's, we have Pacific Fiesta, we have Petaluma Market, Sonoma Market.
Andy's.
And then the one that it's changed names a couple times, I think it's now called Bohemian Market out in Occidental. So then you have all those. And then for the very outer circle, you have the regional and national chains. And I think that the reason I find this helpful is that a lot of people struggle, oh, where can I get the cheapest thing? Where can I get the best organic food? You know, where am I best going to spend my money? And that can just make your eyes cross over, I think. You can jump in your dentist anytime you want. But if instead you think that I am benefiting myself and my community the most, the closer to home I keep my money, then it all just sort of plops into place. If you can grow some herbs instead of buying herbs, that's, I think, the best place to start. Because if you're going to make, say, thyme mustard, and we're going to be talking about mustard shortly, you know, if you don't have a plant, if you need, say, half a teaspoon of fresh thyme leaves, you've got to go buy a bunch of it at the store or go out and pick a little bit. And it's very easy to grow and grow it in a small container. You can put it in the ground if you have more space. So if you think about it that way, I think it gets less confusing, and it eventually becomes very intuitive, so that you know if you need some tomatoes and you're not growing them, you just see the farmer's market close to you and you go there. And you know, you don't think, well, I'll see if Safeway has them, because the quality is not going to be the same. And plus, there's a big move. Paula Downing can talk about this in more detail than I can, but there's a move to shift. I think it's something really small, like just 10% of our dollars that we spend shopping. If we could shift 10% from regional or national businesses to local businesses, it would transform the local economy. So anyway, that's one way to think about it, and it's doesn't have anything to do with the show tonight, really. I just wanted to mention it before I introduced our guest. And there's one other thing that I wanted to mention, even though no one connected to this, it's quite likely will ever hear me, but I just wanted to send out condolences to the family and friends and colleagues of Chef Walter Scheib. He was hired by Hillary Clinton as the White House chef. He was with the Clintons, I believe, for 6 years, and then stayed on until Laura Bush, and he felt it was time for him to move on. But he was with the Bushes for a couple of years at least. I met him at least once or twice. Extremely nice, humble, accessible man. I was at an event up in Mendocino County and spent the afternoon chatting with him about cooking for the Clintons and state dinners and stuff. And he published a very nice book I wrote about a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember. I think I had him on the show. Haven't had a chance to go through the archives. He died mid-month. He was going hiking. He had recently moved to New Mexico. He was going hiking, and they don't know yet if he actually fell, tripped, or what, but he was found, oh, God, quite a number of days after he went missing. He had drowned in a waterway about a mile, 1.7 miles from where his car was. And from what I've read, it sounds like he might have fallen down and landed there. Anyway, Walter Scheib, a great chef. I love his book. Really love his book. I'll probably be revisiting it in my column sometime soon. Sad loss. He was only 60, 61, and really a great man. On that note, another great man.
Oh, thanks.
Someone I see several times a month, not as much in the summer as in the off season, we shall say, because he alternates between the Windsor Market and Sebastopol Market on Sundays. But it is Dennis Dunn, brother of Franco Dunn, who sells at several markets, sells Franco's One World sausages, and has also become a purveyor of home crafted foods in his own right, and is just back from what sounds like a very delicious trip to New York.
Yes, we ate our way through the five boroughs. It was wonderful.
You didn't have to buy two seats on the way back, did you?
Thank God the seat in between it that me and the other guy was empty. So,
really?
Yes, it was
wonderful.
Wow,
that's so rare these days.
That's right. It was great.
How long were you there?
We were there for a week.
Okay, and I know you started out, I think your first meal was Russ and Daughters?
Russ and Daughters Cafe. And one of the things that I wanted to do while I was there, because as you well are aware, I've been making a lot of shrub recently.
Yes.
And the very first menu I saw, there were two shrub on the menu.
Oh, I know they had beet shrub. What else?
They had a raspberry Asian pepper.
Asian pepper. Do you know what kind of Asian pepper?
No, I do not.
That's interesting. I was wondering if it was a pepper, an actual pepper, or a chili.
I believe it was a black pepper.
Oh, interesting.
I believe it was a black pepper.
Cool.
Unfortunately, I saw it, and I looked at the ingredients and didn't try it because I had my eyes set on an egg cream. I should have gone with the shrub.
You should have gone with the shrub. I could smack you. Well, was it red beet or another kind of
beet? It was red beet, definitely. I saw it served. I didn't get a chance to taste it.
I have a refrigerator full of golden beets right now ready to make shrub. And do you cook them? Do you grate them? What do you think?
I would probably grate them and then add the sugar. I don't know if you need to cook them or not.
Depends. Oh, you would add sugar?
I would. To make a real syrup. I think I would.
We'll have to duel here.
Yeah, we'll have to duel. We'll have to see. I'm not sure.
Okay, because this is what I'm thinking about doing. I think I'm going to peel them, and then I'm going to shred them in my Cuisinart because they're so hard. And then I think I'm going to use our organic apple cider vinegar without sugar. And I'm trying to decide if I might do add ginger, a little ginger, because beaten ginger goes so well. And then I'll just do the infusion until it tastes good. And then after I strain it, because beets are a source of sugar.
Right.
You know, that's what they use during World War II, when it was really hard to get cane sugar, they used beet sugar. So since there's potentially so much sugar in a beet, I thought that I would wait on the sugar and just add, after I strain it, then I was going to add simple syrup if it needed it.
That'd be good.
So I'm going to try that, and I'm going to bring you a taste.
Okay. The other one that I saw that same night at a bar, and it's interesting and kind of intriguing to me, that they used in a lot of cocktails, was a cucumber shrub.
Oh, yeah. Now, I like cucumber shrub, absolutely, and I have a recipe in one of my new books that's coming out for cucumber shrub.
Oh, perfect.
I like that with no sugar at all. I like it with a little...
I could see that.
Yeah, a little citrus zest.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, it's so refreshing. I mean, you want to pour it in a spray bottle and spritz yourself with it in hot weather.
It sounded very refreshing.
Yeah, and you can put in some cilantro. You can put in some mint.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things you can put. But, you know, when you think about it, what is a shrub? A shrub is the food that you're putting in, some sort of fruit.
Right.
And vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most refreshing salads in the world is sliced cucumbers in vinegar. So it makes total sense. And some add sugar and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes total sense that it would just be a marvelous shrub.
I think that's going to be my next one.
Cool. So you sell at several farmers markets.
Right.
You sell your brother's charcuterie and sausages.
That's correct.
And then you started making mustard 3 or 4 years ago? Don't tell me it's been longer than that.
No, actually, it's been about 2.5 years.
Okay, good.
After many failures and somebody came to a farmer's market and said, you know, I wrote a book on mustards, and quickly went home and got it for me. It's fun. It's interesting. What you can do with it, the different flavors, where to take it, sweet mustards, hot mustards, you can pair it with almost anything. Mm-hmm. The red wine mustard with pork is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Use it as a glaze.
And you start out with whole mustard seed, right?
I start out with whole mustard seed. Mm-hmm. Although, after visiting the boutique... Mm-hmm.
You should describe the boutique.
The My Boutique in
Uptown. That's M-A-I-L-L-E.
In Uptown, New York. I'll put it this way. I thought that I did a pretty good job with mustards, but I bow to the mustard gods.
They've been doing it for...
1780s.
Yes.
1780s. They have a head start on me, but...
Yes. They were one of the first.
Yeah.
For a while, there were scores of mustard producers in France, starting, I believe, in the 1500s or even a little earlier, but both the House of Maille and Grey Poupon were established in the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have a bit of history.
Exactly. So they originally opened boutiques in London, Paris, and... I can't think of the third city, but they also just recently opened the boutique.
Yeah, just opened it as the book was... They opened it just in time for me to get it in the new book.
Exactly, in New York. And it's a wonderful little store. They had, I'd say 6 or 7 mustards on tap. So they just, you know...
Tubs. Olive oil that you can, you know, fill your own bottle.
Yeah, similar. And then they had, probably another 8 or 9 different to taste.
Mm-hmm.
And
then how many to sell overall? A couple hundred?
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Easily. Is maybe a half a Guinness sizes.
Okay. And how big is this room, Mike? What is it, 15 by 15?
Yeah.
10 by 15?
And floor to ceiling of every flavor that they had.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I wasn't in the mood for the fruit mustard, so I stuck with the white wine, and then I came to this one, the walnut mustard, and I just found it to be something special.
We're going
to
taste that, and I went online and looked at the ingredients, so it's based on walnut oil, and France, of course, makes the world's best walnut oil, and we are going to taste it. I didn't double dip. I turned to the other end.
That's okay. This was along with the white wine mustard, mm-hmm. I thought this was just spectacular.
You know, you really get the flavor of the walnut on the long finish. It just like a wine that reverberates for a long time after you've swallowed it. That walnut just builds and builds and builds.
Mm-hmm.
It starts out very salty. And then that saltiness, which never bothers me.
I was going to mention that.
Yes,
we tasted this one, as a matter of fact.
The salt, my friend. But then the salt fades away mid-palate, and you just get this really long. And this is the first time I've been tasting it, honest. The walnut just, like, resonates.
I've had it on sausage. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. I've seen most of the recipes I've seen using this mustard have all involved chicken, which I found interesting.
Uh-huh.
But we'll see. I'll play with it. I'm actually going to try it. That's why I'm going to go to my next batch is going to be mustard powder. I'm going to try to recreate this. If I can.
That would be mustard flour.
Yes, mustard flour.
What are you going to use? Are you going to use Coleman's or?
I think I'm going to get some bulk brown seed, mm-hmm, and use my coffee grinder see how powdery I can get it.
Uh-huh.
And go that route.
Okay, cool. I was going to say, I can see making deviled eggs with this and chopping the deviled eggs with, you know, a little bit of toasted walnut. That would be nice.
Yeah. It was an interesting mustard. It was my favorite while we were there.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. Now, you have one here. Let me see what I can tell from smelling
it. Oh, you'll know.
No, it's not what I think it is.
It's the green peppercorn.
Oh.
That's a fairly raw green peppercorn.
Okay, you know what I was thinking? It's not what I was thinking.
Oh.
But, excuse me, I know why. I was thinking, God, there's this tanginess that's like rhubarb, but green peppercorn.
It's the green
my
peppercorn.
My favorite. That's always been my favorite.
I've got a lot of that I've let age for, that's about 3 weeks old,
mm-hmm,
and it's actually still pretty raw. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take some of that and play with it and see if I can create something from that. I mean, add to it.
Uh-huh. Well, I need a pretzel. Oh. I'm going to try this. And we need to pass it over to Mike as well. So let's see, Mike, here you go.
Thank you.
And we still got to get you here. Let me get you the walnut as well. Do people who buy sausages from you also buy mustard? Are they looking to combine the two?
A lot are. I've got a fairly loyal clientele with the mustard. They're always asking me, you know, and as with the sausage, they're very particular about which ones they want. Mm-hmm. Some people want the beer mustard. My daughter, for instance, she won't touch any of the other ones. She wants the beer mustard.
And why don't you describe what the beer mustard is?
The beer mustard is, and that one is the one that I started with before I talked to you, as a matter of fact. I use a combination of yellow and brown seed, and it's not whole seed. I'd say it's definitely not smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly rustic. I take
you crush them, grind them up.
Grind them up, and then it sits in. I use actually Negro Modelo as the beer, and it sits in the beer for a good week, and then I add just a touch of vinegar to that one, and then the spices, and let it sit for probably 3 or 4 more days before I jar it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good mustard, a little bit bitter finish, good bitter finish.
Mm-hmm.
And great with the sausages.
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfect for the sausages. The other fan favorite seems to be the Creole mustard. It's a little bit sweet with the honey. Hector's honey, of course.
Hector's honey.
And some red pepper and the good strong horseradish.
Oh, okay. Nice.
What I've actually found, too, is people have a tendency to confuse the mustard bite with horseradish.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, all the time. Yes. And they believe, oh, this has got a lot of horseradish. No, that's mustard, folks.
Yeah,
what it tastes like.
I was at Woodford the other night, and I just wanted a little nibble. So I asked them about their deviled eggs. He said, oh, they're kind of strong. It's kind of got a lot of horseradish in it. I said, really? And okay, I'll try them. And it's like, where's the horseradish? What are you talking about?
That's hilarious you should say that. We went to the Union Square Farmers Market on Monday, so it was small. We didn't make it to the Saturday one in New York.
Oh, right.
In
yes,
New York.
Yes.
We didn't go to the big one. That's because we went to the smorgasbord, but
we'll get
to that later. And there was a lady selling horseradish sauces. And, oh, just like that, be careful, this is very hot. So I taste the regular horseradish and went, okay, not bad. And she said, well, if you like that, and you don't think, you should try the jalapeno. It's very hot. I didn't want to break her heart, but right. No, not so much.
Yeah. Well, I think, I'm not even sure there was any horseradish in these. I think that, and I think the response is people who are used to yellow mustard are a little, like, taken by surprise mm-hmm. by Dijons and that sort of thing that have the vaporizing heat.
Right. And with horseradish, it's really all about the freshness of the horseradish.
Yeah.
If you get it, you know, pick today, you're crying more than you've ever used onions.
More than
dicing onions. But it mellows. It mellows very fast.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important, mm-hmm. especially with the horseradish.
So how many different kinds of mustard have you made so far?
I've made the...
Are you keeping notes?
No.
Idiot.
I'm kind of... In that respect, I'm like my brother. I've done, let's see, my take on American Yellow, the beer, the...
Red wine.
Creole, the red wine.
Green peppercorn.
The green peppercorn, and then I'm going to be on to this is next, the walnut.
And you're not writing any of this down?
I have, no.
And you're not writing down the proportions? No, you're just doing...
I'll plead the fifth to that, thank you.
But you have a photographic memory, so it doesn't matter.
Hey, I learned to cook from my mom, and it was, hey, just put a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And then you'd call back and say, Mom, it didn't taste like yours. Oh, well, did you put this in it? No, you didn't tell me to. Oh, you have to put that in it.
Yeah. Yep. Before we start talking, because I want to talk about sausages, and I want to talk about smorgasburg, is that it?
Smorgasburg.
But I also want to talk about, because you do fermented hot sauces. And for starters, I want you to explain the difference between fermented hot sauces and vinegar-based hot sauces.
To me, the fermented hot sauces don't need vinegar.
What's the difference of the So the fermentation process... Creates the sourness,
correct.
And doesn't need added sourness.
No, it does not.
So now what happens with the vinegar?
I will only use vinegar to kill the fermentation.
Mm-hmm. But when you're making the...
With the vinegar, there's really no fermentation involved.
Yeah, You chop stuff up and mix it with vinegar. Yeah.
That's it. There's really no fermentation.
And so there's not that depth of flavor.
Not at all. Not in the slightest. Yeah. And as you know, last year we got into, I say we because my brother prodded me, we started aging and fermenting in barrels, in wooden barrels.
Mm-hmm.
And that added a whole nother level of flavor to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm getting into trying to understand better the flavors of the different woods. So, for instance, I know the chestnut gave it a woodsy flavor, but it wasn't as crisp as, say, oak.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, one of the things that I did the research and development is the green habanero and lime and tomatillo mm-hmm. that I want to make. I don't think I would age that in the oak.
No, I wouldn't.
I would age it in the chestnut because mm-hmm. It's going to tone the sharpness of the tomatillo and the lime down a little bit.
Right.
Whereas if I did it in the oak, I think it would go the other direction.
Uh-huh. This makes me think of something you should know about. Do you know Bustelos? Have you ever heard of Bustelos?
No.
Okay, Larry, I'm not going to think of Larry's last name right now. Larry, maybe we will. Maybe Larry Watson? He was a friend, and this was quite a number of years ago. He started making hot sauce out of Occidental. He's married to a friend of mine.
Barrel-aged.
Have you tasted it?
I got...
Somebody gave you... One of the last bottles.
Nick from Woodenhead Wines.
Nick Wood.
Nick had 3/4 of a bottle when I started, mm-hmm. and he said, "You have to try this," and brought me about 3/4 of a bottle. It was delicious.
Might be able to find one more bottle. It would be great. You know, I think it was Larry Watson. He was married to a friend of mine, Susan, and he was doing really well with it. It was really popular. There was huge demand. I think he might have eventually started doing a couple of kinds, but one had chipotle. He was, I think, the first person to do chipotle-based hot sauce, and this was in the 90s. Sadly, he killed himself
mm-hmm.
maybe about a decade or so ago. And last time I talked to Susan, she had a couple cases of Bustelos left.
I've... I'm actually going to do a Chipotle in in Wood this year. I've already recruited Libby from Beat Generation, and she's going to fire up her her pepper roaster for me.
Great.
And
no roaster.
Yeah, she's got the barrel roaster,
but she doesn't need to roast for Chipotles. You don't need to roast them.
We're going to anyway.
Oh, you
and
are.
Okay. I've made the roasted pepper.
Okay.
In the pat, and it really brings out the sugars. So it's really
good. Yeah, because usually they're smoked.
Yeah. No, we're gonna bring out the roaster and let it go.
Okay. Okay. Well, we look forward to that. And on that note, we're gonna take a little break here, and we'll be right back with more talk with Dennis Dunn. We're gonna eat some more mustard.
The telephone. I just wanna rock away my cares, sleep like a baby in a rocking chair, make believe that it turned out right. Hollywood in the end, a starry night. Hollywood in the end, a starry night. Running through my head about the things that we've done, the things we said. I don't wanna get out of my bed. Hey, I just wanna rock away my cares, sleep like a baby in my rocking chair, make believe my dreams came true. But I spent my life making love to you, spent my life making love to you. Or a good night kiss. If you really want to cry, I'll make you a list. The simple things are the ones you miss. Hey, I just want to rock away my cares, like a baby in a rocking chair, lie in the shelter of your eyes, safe in love and away from harm, safe in love and away from harm.
It's Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming with two puppies chiming in. They are now sound asleep. They figured out that, oh, this guy doesn't bring sausages with him to the show. So let's, for now, before we get to Smorgasburg, let's talk about your brother's sausages.
Please.
Because I'm going to try, you know, Franco will be on sometime. He's been a little overloaded lately.
He's amazing. I mean, he's been doing it for 35 years. I know of no one personally that knows more about sausage than that man does.
Yeah, and he's the way he talks about what he does is fascinating. He calls himself a sausage anthropologist and exchanges recipes with people all over the planet online.
We actually got a recipe for a the Maltese National Sausage, Salsette Tall Maltese.
He's talked about it.
That he got from playing Scrabble with somebody in Malta.
Yeah, online Scrabble.
Yeah, he's a gem. I mean, he
and people should know, he was the very first employee with, you know, Sausage King, Bruce Idell's.
Bruce Idell's, yes. They were making, I'd say approximately 90 pounds of andouille a week at Bruce's house in Kensington in the Berkeley Hills. And they had an old commercial refrigerator as a smoker. Yeah. And then Bruce went his way and started Adele Sausage Company, and Franco went to the Culinary Academy, and then to Jordan, and then to Italy, and back,
and opened
Santi.
Yeah,
He's fun. I mean, it's amazing to go up and watch him work. You have to understand that he does everything by hand. Somebody was talking to me today. Oh, does he have a machine for this? Does he have a machine for that? No, he mixes by hand.
He doesn't chop. He grinds, though.
He grinds.
He's a grinder.
He uses a grinder. But he mixes by hand. He stuffs by hand. I showed somebody a package and said, you know, these are all hand-tied. And they're almost all, every week, they're the same
size. Identical.
They're the same size. Mm-hmm. They're identical. It's amazing to watch him.
He also makes terrines. Sometimes he does pancetta.
Pâtés. Well, actually, we'll
have his chicken liver pâté is
We will actually have
killer.
Pancetta, well, before the riots start, because he hasn't made it in a while.
No, he hasn't.
We will actually have pancetta the week after next.
Oh, great.
It will start drying this week, and we should have it the week after next.
Great.
But it's funny. I mean, he's extremely particular about his grinds. Different sausages have to have different grinds.
Well, of course.
And what their uses are for. So, like an all sauce for cassoulet is going to be a coarser grind with the big pieces of fat in it. Mm-hmm. Whereas you get into the vice verse and the verse, it's going to be more emulsified, closer to the hot dog end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Some spices go in dry, some spices go into the sausages wet. I just watch in awe and get to package them. That's about what I get to do.
They're beautiful. I limit myself because I cannot resist the andouille. I can't resist it. And so, not entirely, but I limit myself mostly to that so that I just don't weigh 500 pounds because it's one of the things I really can't resist, and they're just so good.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's always fun when he comes up with a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year, he introduced. He finally went to the Far East, and we had the Thai sausages, which were delicious. And I may add, the first time in 35 years that he ever took an actual pork sausage recipe and adapted it to chicken. He finally broke down. First time in 35 years.
Why did he do that? Demand.
It was actually funny because Tom Noble from Armstrong and I had it, and we were talking about it and said, you know, that would be really good with chicken. And so I hit my brother with it, and of course, it just goes right over his head. Well, then he walked over to Tom to get some eggs, and Tom said, you know, Franco, those Thai sausages were delicious. I bet they'd be great with chicken. And the next week or 2 weeks later, he actually did it. That's the only one.
Richard Caggiano. You know, Caggiano Sausages, great guy. He's been on Mouthful a couple of times. His chicken should never be used to make sausages, and I think his chicken sausages are his biggest sellers.
Yeah, there's
a lot of demand for it. People think it's healthier.
Exactly. Well, up until that point, the only chicken that he made was the Moroccan chicken with the dried apricots and almonds, which is wonderful, but it's not my cup of tea, personally.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty amazing, that boy.
Yeah, and you attend. I know you're at the Wednesday Farmers Market at Wells Fargo.
Correct.
And then Healdsburg on Saturday.
Correct.
Any other markets on Saturday?
Wells on Saturday.
Oh, right, that Wells on Saturday and Healdsburg. And then alternating between
Windsor and Sebastopol on Sundays. And then our fun little Tuesday night market up in Cloverdale. Seven vendors, lot of fun.
I really want to go up to that one.
It's a lot of fun. It's us and Lou Preston, Zuriel Bernier Farms.
Doralise goes up.
Doralise
handles.
Six Oaks Farms is there.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan the Mushroom Guy is there. Mm-hmm.
But it's a million degrees.
It can be.
Are you in the shade there?
We are in the shade, and we're right next to Plank Coffee, so we can always go in and get Shrub.
Oh, that Shrub? What kind of Shrub do they have?
That's right. That's where I first saw it. I walked in, Shrub, what's that? Here, try it.
What kind of Shrubs do they have?
The first one I had was lemon, and then he had, this last week was, or the week before last, was strawberry.
Okay.
Yeah, he makes good Shrub.
Uh-huh. Great. That's good to know.
Yeah.
And it will definitely cool you off. I still have, what do I have? I still have blueberry, apricot, and strawberry in my fridge. But I like it with sparkling water. And I keep forgetting to get sparkling water in my fridge.
I ran out of, came home and I still had some peach strawberry. And it was warm and I was thirsty and I didn't have any sparkling water. And I said, well, in colonial America, they mixed it with regular water, and I tried it, and it's delicious.
It's good, but I think it's really good with still water, but you need ice cubes.
Oh, definitely.
And I didn't have ice cubes.
Definitely. And I don't drink much because I'm not supposed to, but my son wanted me
to
bring...
You mean alcohol?
Alcohol, yeah. And so my son wanted me to bring him back some of the blackberry Shrub, and I actually had a blackberry Shrub cocktail at his house. Pretty good.
You can take any form of sparkling wine. You don't want to do a real expensive one, of course, but Vinho Verde, Cava, lower-priced sparkling wines, it's great with a splash.
Delicious.
Now, you made, I think, didn't at the start of the season, didn't you do a plum? Did you do a plum?
I did a plum and black pepper.
Oh, that's a plum and black pepper. And did you, were Santa Rosa plums out yet?
Huh? I'm sorry?
Were Santa Rosa plums out yet?
No.
What kind of plum did you use?
I don't know. I got them from Ponce. Okay. I went over and said, I want plums, and she gave me a bag, and I went home and did it.
Okay, because right now there's an abundance of Santa Rosa plums market, and some of them are really ripe, so I think I'm going to make some Santa Rosa. I love Santa Rosa plums.
Yeah, they're delicious. Right. The market is at that point right now where it's starting to fire up the colors.
Yeah. Heirloom tomatoes colors. Today.
Yes.
And
yes.
I've got all the fixins for the season's first BLT at home.
Perfect.
Yes. Yes. So I think we're going to take one more musical break, and we're going to come back and talk about what appears to be a very astonishing place in Brooklyn.
Going away. Oh, she's got
music tonight has been, of course, Solid Air. Almost said the name of their album instead of the band name. Solid Air, Friends of Mouthful. Local Color is the name of the album. Local Color was a song inspired by Mouthful. We also are starting out the show these days with Norman Greenbaum's Petaluma. Yeah. What a great song that is. And Norman is out and about. He's back at home, still got some, recuperating to do, but he has been out and about and looks really happy and healthy. So congratulations, Norman. We are glad you are good. So you went across the bridge from Manhattan. I think you went to Williamsburg.
It is Williamsburg. Pier 5.
Okay. To something called?
Smorgasburg.
It's like more vendors than all of Northern California if you put us into one farmer's market.
I actually went onto their website before I came just to do a count, and they listed 108 prepared food vendors on their website, and I know there were at least three that I saw that weren't listed. So we'll just say 110 prepared food vendors.
So this isn't a farmer's market.
It's a pop-up. It's a pop-up. They're all intense like farmers markets, except there's no farmers. It's all prepared food.
But also crafts vendors.
I would say there was probably 50 to 70 crafts folks, and then 100 to 120 prepared food vendors of every ilk, cuisine, fusion, ice cream, sweets, beer garden, of course, that you could imagine. And it's every Saturday.
With that many vendors, are there still lines?
It was elbow to elbow. And my son, who took us there and had been before, said, "Dad, if it wasn't raining, there'd be twice this many people."
Wow. What time of day did you go?
11. It opens at 11. It closes at 6. And the major problem was you walk along and you can't figure out what you want to eat.
Yeah.
I mean,
you eat one thing and then you go three doors and it's like, oh, I wish I ate that.
Well, I went with what hadn't I had in a long time that sounded good and research for my brother. Mm. So I had the Isan Thai sausages that they were actually served the traditional way with a small link. As opposed to, the Asian sausage with a small link, as opposed to a long link. I can honestly, in my taste, I think Franco's had much more depth than theirs did. Mm-hmm. They were good, but unprejudiced, I guess.
Not necessarily. Yeah, Franco's might be better. Good.
The other one that I had that was delicious was a Swiss servelat, and it is pork, beef, bacon, pork rind. And it's emulsified like a hot dog. And we've actually looked at the process, and we're not sure that it's pretty labor-intensive. You have to smoke it and continue to change temperatures and then boil it, and then it's ready to go. And they actually score the ends of the hot dog, of the link. So when you grill it, the ends bloom.
They
yeah.
bloom.
Yeah, it looks like a distorted barbell.
Your brother and I have talked about the bloom, and sometimes just a sausage that isn't scored will get the bloom, right. And then it's going to be perfect.
Right, and they were wonderful, and they were served with my mustard. As a matter of fact, and then the other thing that the dish that I hadn't had in ages was lumpia.
Mm-hmm.
They had
Describe lumpia.
They had beautiful little lumpia.
Philippine dumplings.
Rolls.
Sort of.
Yeah,
rolls. Yeah.
Yeah. With a nice, I'm going to guess a plum sauce, mm-hmm. but it was topped with chunks of pork belly and crispy pork rind.
Oh, yum.
it was delicious. And, I mean, they had a porchetta booth. They had a double wide mac and cheese.
With lots of different kinds?
Yes.
Do you remember?
No. Couldn't get near it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The sausage and Scottish eggs.
Uh-huh.
They had homemade Slurpees with fresh fruit syrups. They had, they had an oyster bar. They had a...
How much were the oysters?
Let's see. They were...
Wrong. How much were they?
I think they were... $18 for half dozen.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was. I still had some.
Of course.
It didn't stop me.
I'm just looking for the dollar an oyster.
Exactly. they had, the biggest lines, and it went, you could order in two places, and it went all the way around the back of their tent and met on the far side. And don't ask me, I can't answer it, ramen burgers. It looks like they take ramen noodles
and put the burger in the middle.
And put the burger
in the middle. I've read about them. They sound disgusting.
Yes, they did. I did. I didn't want to go near it.
Yeah, they're a hip new annoyance.
Very, very much so. But it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Mm-hmm.
Did you go in the beer bar? I mean, the beer garden?
No, that was manned by my middle son.
Okay, I just wonder what kinds of things they were serving. So,
yeah,
because I know that sour beers are really popular in Brooklyn.
Yeah, so. he didn't mention sour beers, mm-hmm. but he got his start there.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so yeah, it was a very interesting place, and like I said, some really good food, good people. You know, mm-hmm. every noodle you could think of. Not only did they have the ramen burgers, they had ramen noodles, they had udon,
everything.
They had udon noodles. They had everything. Uh-huh. It was pretty spectacular. Pretty spectacular place.
And it happens
every Saturday. Actually, apparently every Saturday and Sunday. And they now have one in, as I was reading tonight, they have one in Queens and somewhere else, but not nearly as big as the one in Brooklyn. And it's funny, apparently it's taking over the city.
Restaurateurs are probably unhappy.
Well, yeah, we were driving down Broadway on Sunday, on the way to go see the play, and there was a Broadway Bites that was looked like about 20, maybe 25 vendors popped on Broadway.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so apparently it's becoming the thing.
The thing. Did you walk the High Line?
We did not walk the High Line. Did not make the High Line.
Oh.
And
if you don't know what the High Line is, have you walked it?
I have not walked it.
Okay. So the High Line is an old freeway, I guess, that is no longer used. And it started out, people with apartments nearby went up there and started just fixing up little gardens. And it's now become this fabulous space. That's wonderful. When I was there in October, I strolled it with Clark Wolf.
Oh.
And there's all kinds of food to eat, things to do, to hang out right there on the river. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's New York is definitely an interesting place.
Yeah,
it's exciting, fast, but too fast for me. I love visiting, and we had a great time, but too fast for me.
Yeah, where did you stay at your son's?
No, my daughter stayed at my son's, and Matt and I had a hotel in Chelsea, which is actually pretty cool. There, about two doors up, there was a typical New York diner, like. Eight seats at the counter, two tops in the back, and a line out the door.
Sure.
It was great.
Did you eat there?
Yeah.
What was it? What kind of?
We had I just had a basic, eggs, bacon, or okay. eggs, ham, and but we also split one of the traditional New York egg muffins. Apparently, rumor has it that that's where McDonald's got their idea for the egg muffin.
So what is it, an English muffin with eggs?
It actually was, this was actually on a hoagie. Around Hoagie, with egg and bacon. Just, mm-hmm. Basic. We had to have one because.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you what you ate at Russ and Daughter's.
Russ and I had the Nova Scotia lox with eggs sunny side up and a bagel and potato latkes.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it was good. Really good.
And you didn't make it to Katz?
Didn't know. We went to Eisenberg's. Eisenberg's is a little Jewish deli on, I think, 6th. And wonderful Reuben, and the absolute most inedible potato salad I've ever had in my life.
Sweet?
Very.
Oh.
I tried everything at the table to add to it.
Hot sauce, salt, mustard.
I put mustard.
Of course.
I put mustard. I put salt. It was inedible. I could not.
Yeah, there's really almost nothing you can do when it's a sweet potato salad.
Yeah, it was not good. Not good at all. We did find a hot on the way to Smorgasburg. We found a hot sauce boutique, which was
that's
wonderful.
Right. Yeah, talk a little bit. That sounded really interesting. And again, just as the mustard book was going to press, I heard about Mai has a mustard sommelier, and then just after that, I learned that New York now has the first hot sauce sommelier.
Yeah, this was a very tiny. I mean, very tiny store. But they had. It was really nice because we went in and we were talking to the lady, And I said, well, you know, I make hot sauces, and I'm not a fan of two things. I'm not a fan of things hot for the sake of being hot, and I'm not a fan of hot vinegar, and I prefer ferment. And she says, oh, my God, you speak our language. And so she fed me nothing but fermented hot sauces, except toward the end she said, well, you know, I know you don't like vinegar, but they only use the vinegar in this one to kill the fermentation. You should really try it. I think you'll like it. And that's where I actually had the habanero lime, the fermented habanero lime. And it was all I could think about was, boy, I wish I had a couple of eggs right now.
No, I want to go back to something. When you're making a fermented hot sauce, tell me your process.
Depending on the pepper.
Let's just say we have green jalapenos and serranos.
Green jalapenos and serranos.
Chop them up.
I dice them. It depends on how hot I want to make it. But when I'm using serranos and jalapenos, I actually have a formula, believe it or not.
Cool.
For this. My formula for that would be about between 2 or 3 to 1 ratio, meaning I'll use 3 pounds of something other than peppers, be it tomatillos or green bells, to 2 pounds of serrano or jalapeno. Serrano's a little bit hotter, so it might be a little bit more. Habaneros is about...
Oh, habaneros.
Habaneros are about 8 to 1, 10 to 1.
Yeah.
And it still comes out plenty hot. So I'll take whatever ingredients I'm going to use, be it the tomatillos or peppers, and run them through the food processor and get them to not quite liquid. And then onion, garlic, whatever else I'm going to add, and do the same. And it goes straight into the crock.
Salt.
And then I salt it and stir. And it's about, I want to say three, I'd have to look it up, but I think it's about 3 tablespoons of salt to 3 pounds of material. To 3 pounds of material. And then at that point, you have to make sure, as with any fermentation, that you've got liquid over the...
Right, it has to be covered.
Has to be covered. The exception is, well, for me so far, has been when I do it in the barrels, I can't get anything to weigh it down. So I have to just let it crust,
It
crusts over,
yeah,
is what it does.
So it's just the natural lactobacillus.
That's right.
Okay, because I broke my own rule. I made jalapeno serrano hot sauce that turned out fabulous, and I have no idea how I did it.
Yeah, it's really interesting that... Well, a couple of things. One, that I can brag about our local produce. When I get my produce from the local markets, and let's say I'm doing hot sauce, knowing that there's going to have to be liquid over the mash, I'm going to say within an hour after I salt it and I've got it in my crock, that there's a good 1.5 to 2 inches of liquid over the top. If I go to one of the local Andy's Olivers and I buy the best that they have, peppers or whatever, and do the same process, I have to add water every time. And it's because the guys locally pick their veggies at the right time.
Yeah, got enough moisture in there.
And the same thing when I make sauerkraut or kimchi, it's the same without fail. If I get it from the markets... Not a problem. If I get it from one of the other places, I have to add water every time.
Yeah.
I have to make a brine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think now that you've walked me through it, I think that's exactly how I did it. I think I added only garlic. I didn't do any tomatillos. And I think somebody from a market had given me a bunch of jalapenos and serranos. So I just did it. I didn't make a lot. I made a quart.
Yeah. It's funny. The last batch that I did in the barrel, I had some peppers in my garden, so I had a little bit of these. And then Libby had given me some of these paper lanterns to try. And then one night we're up at the Cloverdale market, and this kid walks up that I'd sold sausage to one time a couple of weeks ago. And he walks up with a paper bag and says, you know, I bought sausage from you a couple of weeks ago, but somebody told me you might like these. And he hands me a bag of ghost peppers.
Oh, wow. Ghost?
Yes.
Wow.
And so
if you've not heard of ghost, that's one of the hottest peppers in the world.
So I had the last batch I did was a blend of Mai Tai chilies, habaneros, paper lanterns, and ghost. So
on that note,
yeah. We have to say goodbye.
Oh,
we are out of time.
This was wonderful.
So it's Dennis Dunn. Find him Wednesday, Wells Fargo. Saturday, Wells Fargo. Franco is Saturday in Healdsburg, and then alternating Sundays, Windsor and Sebastopol on Sundays. And we are out of time, but next Sunday it's going to be Kirby Pierce and Mike Young taking over the controls for me, talking about Guys Grilling, and also with a special thing to do with my newest book. So have a great week. Meet me back here next week. I'll be here in spirit on Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming on KRCB Radio 91.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendle Valley, buildings sprout up like new sown seeds. Now they call it Telecom Central. This is what consumers need. I am the hand that rocks the cradle. I am the voice that sings their song. I am the one called local color. Salt of the earth, but not for long. Take a look, 'cause I'm gone. Gamblers in this brand new gold rush, and moving in. This is progress, we ain't got far. I am the hand that rocks the cradle. I am the voice that sings this song. I am the one called local color. Salt of the earth and not for long. Take a look, 'cause I'll be gone. This land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to be.